Welcome to the Irish Pagan School podcast. Your hosts are authors and co-founders of the Irish Pagan School here in County Waterford, Ireland, Laura O'Brien and John O'Sullivan. Fáilte.
Daithi Eve agus Fáilte. Hi, hello and welcome. John O'Sullivan, Irish Pagan School, and we are here with this week's check-in chat and coffee talk. And I have been chewing something over since we got asked a very fascinating question on our Irish Pagan School TikTok about the use of psychoactive substances in ancient Irish druidic practices and whether or not we have evidence of that. So before we kind of get into a bit of a chat on that and share what I have been studying on and exploring, I'd like to invite you down below to click on the links, make sure you're on the mailing list, because that's where we send out a lot of free content regularly to, you know, help support the community and battle back all of the misinformation that is out there, which misrepresents Native Irish spirituality. So again, pop on down, join the mailing list. If you're interested in ancestry work, you can go to irishpagan.school/roots to pick up stuff to explore your own kind of connection to your spirituality through your ancestry, which doesn't have to mean DNA or bloodline or anything like that. So back to the point. So there was a fascinating question that was presented in, and it really was, is there any evidence that the ancient Irish druids used things like lippity-camps or amanitas or any kind of psilocybic mushrooms that grow natively in Ireland as part of their rituals and practices? So to summarize it really, did the ancient Irish druids use shrooms? And it's not an easy one to answer because there is so much missing information that we have around it. And so I have been chewing this over and I've gone and I've done some reading about it. I've got a couple of books to kind of go through. But no matter which way I try and explore this narrative, I do keep hitting the same old stopgap that we have around specific information about druidic practices. And that is the fact that the druids were intentionally undermined and eradicated by the multiple waves of colonization that was done upon the island. There is no unbroken line of druidic practices. There is no ancestral secret hidden information that has been passed down in bloodlines. Literally everything that could have been done to a people to eradicate their culture, their sense of national identity, everything was done to the Irish. And not just by the British, but by the Normans before them, by the Christians before them. Actually, interestingly enough, one of the groups, so the Normans, when they came in, there was the Norman invasion, there was a whole kind of power struggle, the Normans took ascendancy, but there was also an intermingling, and many Norman families became as Irish or even more Irish than the Irish themselves, adopting our culture and our ethnicity and our practices, which led to later problems when the Anglo-Saxons overturned the Normans, and then further eradications. But what's interesting as well is the Vikings, when they came in, we had multiple Viking settlements, we had multiple Viking raids, but there was never a conquest of the island or an eradication of our culture. And so the times, the early medieval period with Viking Ireland, it's very, very fascinating about cohabitation of different cultures. But that is not where we're talking about now. We're talking about druids using shrooms. So we have to kind of go back and look at the practices and the purposes as much as we can say about druids in any kind of culture. And unfortunately, a lot of that does come from outside perspectives. There's many different scholars who wrote about it. Julius Caesar actually wrote about it, his observations of the cultures and the role of certain individuals within tribal or cultural communities. And that's where we get into the druids here, because it wasn't an overarching, not everyone was kind of skilled in these areas of, you know, dealing with death, dealing with the other world, dealing with stuff that is non-mundane, or even dealing with the mundane as far as judgments go, or as far as rulings, preventing battles, or even calling down magical manifestations by recitation. All of these things were observed and documented, but it was notable that there were people within the community or within the tribe who served the overall needs of the tribe as a collective. It wasn't a complete tribal kind of ability. So that's what made this druid caste specifically unique. We also know from the Irish mythology specifically that you couldn't just wake up a morning and be a druid. It wasn't a case of I've hooked a tree on a moonlit night and suddenly I'm a druid. No, you were trained. There was at least a decade's worth of training to be a druid. One of the more famous kind of places is a place called Cashel Monaghan, which is in the Rathcrohan complex over in County Roscommon. And It's a very famous because, of course, it's associated with the very huge complex there, which was the seat of power for Queen Maeve. But it was known as a Druid school. There were two actually Druidesses who were there, Etna and Fidelma, who were like, you know, training to be Druids. And they came down to the triple spring in that area known as Ogla Well, where they would wash themselves. And actually this crosses off whatever the St. Patrick story, and St. Patrick and his lads rock on up and they find these two women washing themselves in the springs. And they're like, well, I'm going to have to finish that story. Essentially, Patrick and his mates find these women washing themselves. And instead of being like, yeah, okay, we lead them to their business, they watch for a while. And then eventually the women are like, yeah, what are you doing there? And Patrick comes out and is like, yeah, we're coming around preaching the story of the one true God. And, you know, the Druids women, the Etna and Fidelma, are like, you know, well, we believe in many gods here. Like, you know, we study up in Cashel Monaghan about many gods here. So like, you're saying that there's only one. And as the story goes, St. Patrick was like, yep, there is, and there's a way for you to experience and see the one true God. And they're like, yeah, well, we're open to exploring new knowledge. How do we do this? And he's like, you have to be baptized. And so it says that right then and there, St. Patrick baptized these two Druid women, the Etna and Fidelma, and they were raptured instantly and taken into heaven. They're now referred to as St. Etna and St. Fidelma in that area, because they're saints now. Because they experienced the Holy Spirit and God came into them and they were instantly raptured. I have questions. I do have questions, which, you know, we'll get into in another stage because I'm talking about Druids here. There was training, there was specific training done, and the core of the training was actually memorization. You know, anyone looking to be a Druid would have to learn stuff by rote, but actually memorize that, not this information. Not just to have that information available, but also memorize a way to be able to access this information or speak about this information while still keeping the content obfuscated or in some way hidden or protected from generic and mundane use. And so that's why we have many different stories talking about Druids performing these recitations in very archaic language for the time frames in which it was written. We've documents and stories that go back to the 8th and 9th century, which talk about battle lines being formed and, you know, Druids would step forward and they would then speak in these incantations, which would then freeze and cause like fear within the enemy so that they would not move and they would just stand there and take wounds. And this was a power that was presented by these Druids and documented in these experiences. But the wording that was used, even at that point, was archaic or didn't really make as much sense or didn't really kind of fit with what was actually happening. So they were reciting loudly and vocally to have the impact that they would have, but the information that was being provided in the recitations themselves was protected. And, you know, when people talk about occult information, occult actually just means hidden. So it's hidden knowledge. And so all of these kind of experiences and all these information about the Druids and the Druid rituals, being that we know it wasn't a written down or a formalized structure, the ancient Irish society was an oral tradition. In fact, the bards as well, bards and brehons, the judges, were trained in the same school as Druids. So there was not much of a difference between bards and brehons and Druids. It comes down to almost like their niche speciality, either in the natural philosophies or the rule of judgment or in the memory and the function and the power of recitation. And so we know that there are many different rituals. In fact, one of the more famous ones is well documented. It's known as a Tarav Fesh, or a bull feast, where if someone was due to be crowned as king in Ireland, a ritual would be performed where a specific bull would be slaughtered, usually like a white bull with red ears, indicating like an other world kind of element, which is that white red eared element. The bull would then be slain, and an individual would then drink the blood of the bull, the broth of the bull, eat the flesh of the bull, wrap themselves in the bull's kind of skin, and then, like, you know, sleep in a vat of pretty much the blood and all the rest of it. And it's said that that individual in the sleep would have visions about who should be the right king, who should be the real king, and that if they were to speak a falsehood about what they have seen in their visions, they would straight up die on the spot. Now, it's very detailed provided, but the context, again, is this external scholarly position saying, look at these barbarians doing this horrible kind of things. But if we remove the external bias and look at what was actually documented, we have a very clear ritual performance being done to access divinatory or you know, prognostication powers to be able to see what is the truth or what is the future or what is kind of the right way to go about these things, as we understand the rule of ancient Irish tradition was about the connection between our world and the other world. If specifically a king was not in keeping right balance and right relationship with the other world, with like the denizens of the other world, the powers of the other world, then our world, the island of Ireland, would be brought to ruin and famine and destruction. But the people who facilitate all of these interactions between our world and the other world aren't the kings, aren't the warriors. It is this particular cast of individuals, the druids, bards, fila, or brehens. And so the need for these experts in the non-mundane is clear. And it wasn't just in Ireland. All across many Celtic nations and even beyond Celtic nations into First Nations, we have medicine workers. We go over to the Mongolian tribes where we get the word shaman from. Culturally speaking, there has always been people, small or in the unique individuals in many cases within tribal cultures, who service the need of the collective in the bigger form and the bigger groups in these non-mundane elements, in dealing with the dead and dealing with the other life passing over, and, you know, again, advice and magical means. Now, the other element to this, shrooms. So we know that there are multiple native mushrooms that grow in Ireland, which have psilocybin in them, which is a psychoactive substance. Again, there's also many other mushrooms very similar that grow in Ireland that are extremely poisonous and toxic. So it's very important to be aware and to be an expert in knowing what you're doing and knowing what you're working with. We know from this information, there was druidic practices involving flora, involving fauna, involving harvesting things at different times of years, involving different types of woods, different types of plants. That's known, but it doesn't specifically say that, you know, this information was used for these rituals or these performances. Now, there are, in, again, other cultures, rituals where people would go in and, you know, engage in or in the use of an intoxicant in order to open or expand their perceptions, or to engage in some kind of ritual practice in order to experience the non-mundane or to perceive the non-mundane. We know that Ireland, ancient Ireland, had similar traditions of like sweat lodges, for example, where people would be put into it and they would go through some kind of process or some kind of ritual, but it was never documented in that same way. And because of the eradication of the culture, we can't say for sure what exactly was or wasn't done or was or wasn't used in those circumstances. But what we can kind of extrapolate is that there was a lot of knowledge around this information. Like, you know, there is another member of tribal society was known as a Ban Fasa, or a wise woman. Usually a lot of herb lore and information of a lot of healing, midwifery, and again, dealing with otherworldly forces, the people of the Shee and the other crowd, would go down through a Ban Fasa, through those people. And so there's always these kind of elements, but we can't 100% say that, yes, okay, druids did shrooms, because there's no particular evidence on that, because it was an oral tradition and there was so much emphasis put on keeping the information secure and, you know, held with, like, not just from the case of power and, like, you know, okay, well, we have knowledge and therefore we have power. Yes, that does happen. You know, we find many, like, named druids right there beside the seats of powers, like, you know, Caffa's right beside Concover up in Ulster during the Ulster cycle, for example. You know, we have many stories also during the Ulster cycle of Aherin, who was like a bard trained in like those kind of processes, who also manifested magical abilities through recitation. We have Finnegan in the mythological cycle, who was able to diagnose Aengus Og just by looking at the smoke that was coming out of his house and know that he had a love sickness on him, and then find some way to work through that by, again, dealing with the other world cause for that, which was his woman love care from the other world, who had kind of come to Aengus in visions when he was sleeping. So there's always been this person, there's always been these individuals, and it's not for everybody. Like, it would take a serious amount of physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual skill and fortitude to be able to hold all of these information in the mind, to hold the concept of our world and another world at the same time in our psyche, to be able to understand that we are both of our world but not of our world, and that there is this other reality. Even as I talk about it, it becomes baffling very quickly, and this is my area of expertise. I do not claim to be a druid. I'm a bard, I'm a storyteller, and my area of study is all of these areas. But to hold these two kind of diametrically opposed, like the mortality of our species, but the immortality of those in the other world, and to hold the fact that time as a construct is very specific and like detailed in our existence, but it doesn't apply to the other world. So there are so many different areas where logically we come into conflict between our reality and that reality. And then spiritually, emotionally, physically dealing with all of these, not just on behalf of yourself, but on behalf of a collective or a community, it's kind of easy to see how it would be unique or specific individuals who would be able to like step up to the skill challenge to learn how to do that, but then to be able to live and continue with that ability, with those kind of burden in many ways. Yes, okay, there's power with it, people listen to your advice, but you then are the person that everyone goes to for advice on these topics, and you have to be able to kind of support them and be there every single time. So we know that there were druids, we know that there was information of them, we've many names of them all the way down through the mythological cycle, Ulster cycle, Fenian cycle, down to the cycle of kings even, which is our last kind of great academic cycle listing out the kings in Ireland, which goes from the mythological into the actual historical. So the latter parts of the cycle of kings are actually historical figures that we can point at and say, you know, this is where they're literally buried, Brian Boru, for example, etc. We know they're historical figures. Niall Ní Gnádach, Niall of the Nine Hostages, like Conn of the Hundred Battles, like these are historical figures as much as they are mythological figures in many ways. And all of them had advisors and all of them had druids. So the cultural eradication that was performed by the multiple colonizations of our Ireland was so extensive that, you know, we have some information left, but there is so much more information that is lost. And that's why we can never say for sure, did the druids do this? Did the druids do that? All we can do is look at the information we have, extrapolate on it, and explore it from a cultural context, explore it from an academic context, and then explore it from a spiritual context through otherworld journeying, through guided meditation practices. And, you know, at the school, at our Irish Pagan School, we teach like the journeying practices, we teach the academic sides, we don't initiate people into any kind of practices, we don't kind of endorse any use of intoxicants as part of, like, you know, process, because not everyone, again, has the skill set or has the fortitude to be able to process through that information and, you know, manage with it from a point of view of their own growth, or to do that on behalf of other people as well. So fascinating question that was presented to us. You can see I answered it with a short video a while ago. It is still chewing around in my brain. I have books here on my desk right beside me where I have been reading specifically as much as I could about druidic practices, looking for any information around it. But though we have instances where we can point at it, there's other practices of bards where they would chew pieces of red meat, wrap it in certain like herbs, and then put it under the lintel of some, or the flagstone at someone's back doorstep, not the front doorstep, the back doorstep. And then, you know, they would sleep in that house that night and they would get a vision. And if they didn't get a vision, they'd have to go out, they'd have to kind of unwrap it again, rewrap it in a different way, leave it upside down and try again to see if they got the information. So there is some fascinating kind of rituals which are documented, some fascinating kind of processes. But for all that we have some information, we have to acknowledge that what we know is a fraction, a drop in the water of what has been lost to us. And so thank you very much for that question. I do appreciate it. This has been a bit of a ramble rant about it. Did the ancient Irish druids use shrooms? We can't say for sure. We can't say they did. We can't say they didn't. But I think regardless of the items themselves, it is worth focusing on what was the purpose of it. Why would you do a thing? Like, why would someone like gorge themselves on bull meat, drink the broth, drink the blood, wrap themselves in the skin, and then lie down there and try and sleep at this big mad festival where all of the powerful people are there? Like, why would someone put themselves through that if not for the greater cause, the greater like need, the greater kind of requirement of service to the community? And I think that's where we need to kind of look at the focus for me going forward. But what are your thoughts? Do you find it interesting? Has this kind of like, you know, stimulated something for you? Do you have any further questions? Please let us know. I always love a good question because it gives me an opportunity to see what I know, see what I don't know, and explore and learn more. As ever, Gaurav Mahagath, thank you for being with us. Do make sure you pop down, join on the mailing list, get access to all of those free resources that we have available. And until next time, look after yourself, take care, and slán. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a positive review in your podcast listener. Then head over to irishpaganschool.com and enroll in one of our free or paid courses. Slán go fóill, and we will see you next time.